Fellow Freedom fans, David Allen Carmichael back here with the Faith and Freedom Show. You can find out about me. Type in David Allen, that's A-L-A-N, carmichael.com.net.org, whatever you'd like to do. I'm broadcasting here on Frank Talk 104.3 FM for the Liberty Works Radio Network. Today we have Jason Sager as our guest, and we have a call from Brian Moore. That'll be an exciting call because many of you know Brian Moore and the activities he's been involved in. But before we go there, I'm going to talk about something that's historic. I want all to listen. This is a statement by Sir William Blackstone, referring to the legislature and people who want to run for such a high office as to represent people, and he used the term parliament. But tune into this, folks. He said, "Most gentlemen of considerable property at some period or other in their lives are ambitious of representing their country in parliament. And those who are ambitious of receiving so high a trust would also do well to remember its nature and importance. They are not thus honorably distinguished from the rest of their fellow subjects merely that they may privilege their persons, their estates, or their domestics, that they may lift under party banners, may grant or withhold supplies, may vote with or against a popular or unpopular administration, but upon considerations far more interesting and important. They are guardians of the, I'll say, American Constitution, the makers, repealers, and interpreters of the, I'll say, American laws, delegated to watch, to check, and to avert every dangerous innovation." That's what I'm just going to stop there. There's a comma, and it's a much longer statement, but I wanted to hopefully put a little perspective that I have on the history of those things that our founders were reading. Now, we're going to go back to Jason Sager, and thank you for calling, Brian Moore. What's your question or comment for Jason?
Well, I just had a concern about his comments that we don't want to depend upon health care from the government and really should go back to the private sector. And my concern is, or question, is why would he want to return or be solely dependent upon the private sector when that system has been so broken and wasteful and costly to our country, and it's deprived many Americans of proper health care? Now, I'm not promoting big government, but I really think that there is a place play for Medicare for All or a national health plan that's administered through the government by doctors and nurses and consumers. So I see his solution as returning to the problem and making it worse.
Well, Brian, thank you for asking. It's a pleasure to finally talk to you. You're quite well known and famous here in Hernando County, where I'm from. And let me address on two different levels. The first one is what the expense in what has happened with our healthcare system, because you're right, it's absolutely broken and it's failed us miserably. But the problem is not that we have created government healthcare from day one, and our health insurance system has never operated in a free market system. So what I would like to do is try to get to an actual free market system, just like we have with car insurance. It's been a proven system to work over and over again. Now, the other part that is a major contentious issue with me is that the federal government has no authority underneath the Constitution of the United States of America. It has not now, nor will it, nor in the past, had the authority to delve into individual decisions that we make on matters of our own health. That's the crux of the matter. You know, we can debate whether or not a certain health care plan or a government plan is one better than the other all day long, and it would be a valid debate. Everybody has a good idea. But the problem that I have is that we live in the United States of America, and our federal government is supposed to be limited by the Constitution, and they have no authority to do this unless the people of this country demand a constitutional amendment to amend Article 1, Section 8, giving them that power. That's the root of the problem that we're now discussing.
Okay, I'm going to jump in there. Hey, Brian, by the way, the statistics that you gave, I wish we could go back to it and review it. There were some statistics that came out in the last 2 years about 17.5% of the gross national product is in healthcare, and then it's within so many years it's going to be 25%, and by so many years it's going to be 50%. I actually checked the government figures. Those rates had to do with government health care. They, based on the Congressional Budget Office report, that it came out and said that those were the federal welfare benefit health system numbers. It turned out the gross national product for state and federal combined with and private combined total and averaged out is actually 6%. So those numbers that we're seeing that the sky is falling is actually has only and solely to do with the federal system, based on the numbers that I found on our last discussion. Now you can comment on that or go to your next question, because you're a great caller.
Well, $500 billion a year is consumed or acquired by the private, the 1,600 private insurance companies. That's close to 35% of all health care dollars that are spent in the United States. I think it's something like $1.6 trillion.
Yeah, but that's not the health care cost. That's health insurance. What's happening is we got the fruit salad syndrome going on here, so it's very hard to distinguish the truth. What I'd like you to do, let's go ahead and go to the next question.
Okay. The next question would be that, Mr. Sager, do you favor, or are you advocating or urging that Sheriff Nugent withdraw from the race based on his collusion with Ginny Brown Waite in deciding to run at the last second and waiting at the last moment so no one else could make a decision to participate in the campaign process or not?
I'm actually not, and I'm also not calling for the sheriff to resign. There's been a lot of people out there, and I was misquoted in the newspaper on the first day of saying that I was one of the folks asking him to resign, and
well,
I've been pretty clear that I believe that is a decision that the sheriff has to make for himself. I think he knows the right decision, whatever that decision may be, and it's based on whether or not he can effectively handle the job of sheriff and running a campaign, but that is his decision to make. I am not going to try to force him out of the race by any technicality, but what I will do is I will take this argument to the people. And the people on August 24th in our primary will be able to make the decision on whether or not Mr. Nugent is going to go forward into the general election or not. I personally think that the way that Mr. Nugent got into the race was not a ethical or Republican-style event, and I don't support it in any way, but that Mr. Nugent is a well-respected man here in the community, and he's going to run his campaign, and I'm going to run mine.
Well, I mean, I'm going to give a little fairness here, because anybody could just pay the $10,444 at the under the wire. Really, it could have been anybody and their brother that did it. And I would say if I was sitting in Congress, I would, if I was going to drop out, I would want to somehow be able to say, hey, I'm dropping out, but I think, I read some statements by Ginny Brown Waite about you, and I thought it was kind of off color, and of course they're going to quote whatever they can to sell newspapers, but I could see somebody actually trying to ask somebody to come on board to run, so I could see that. Now whether or not she I think really the onus is on her telling everybody at the last minute, really, because I think that is not necessary. It doesn't really show on its face good faith, but I think that's on her shoulder. So I mean that's my perspective.
Well, I'm going with the thoughts and feelings of those within my political party and the people that I've surrounded myself with, and they are not necessarily in favor of the actions that transpired. And one of the comments that I absolutely disagree with when Mr. Nugent was questioned on this was that he was quoted as saying, "It is her seat. We did it her way." And I would like to remind Mr. Nugent that this is not Ginny Brown Waite's seat. This is the people's seat of Congressional District 5. And in August 24th, in our Republican primary, they will choose who will represent them in that seat.
Okay. Well, thank you. And by the way, Brian Moore, thank you for calling. And we had to cut Brian off because he was bleeding over into Mr. Jason Sager's commentary. And I don't really have the mechanism to have somebody, when you're trying to interrupt somebody speaking, I don't really have the inner mechanism to tune you down without cutting you off, so I apologize for that. But again, the lines are open at 888-850-1872. That's 888-850-1872. If you'd like to talk to Jason Sager and ask him a pointed question, that's fine. Please give us a call at 888-850-1872. If it just rings, well then, just hang on, because eventually we're gonna have somebody answering the phone. So if it starts ringing and you're not getting in, well, just hang on and let it ring. It's not going to break our hearts. Hey, caller, thank you for calling Frank Talk 104.3 FM. Do you have questions or comments for Jason Sager?
Great interview. I'm wondering if maybe Mr. Nugent would come on next week or in the next few weeks as a possible interview. And my question is for the candidate, his position on so-called fair tax.
Okay.
Well, I'm glad you asked. That's part of my platform as far as how we're going to fix the economy. And I am a firm supporter and educator on the fair tax. I believe in the system. I wish that we could just immediately repeal the 16th Amendment and go back to the original form of taxation and not even have an income tax whatsoever from the federal government. But I also understand that we have a federal government that is so massive that if we were immediately returned to that, you would be facing for sure financial collapse. I feel that the fair tax is the best transitionary tool that has been presented in order to wean us off of the original system. And I hope someday that my son, who's now 4 years old, will enjoy a system of no tax whatsoever from the federal government on the individual.
Well, the fair tax, as I know it, is a value-added tax that's being now promoted worldwide. So my question is, if you do promote it, would you first push it after the income tax is applied to an American citizen is then abolished? On the
yes.
American citizen,
yes. That is a flaw currently in the bill, is that it is depending upon a future Congress to repeal the fair tax, or to repeal the 16th Amendment, excuse me. And I think that is a flaw, and that's something that I would offer an amendment to on the bill, is that we repeal the 16th Amendment first and replace the 16th Amendment with something that would enact, give the federal government the authority to even do the fair tax. It's not really a VAT tax as in the European model, where things are taxed at different rates depending on production and depending on the supply chain. The fair tax is a consumer-based, at the cash register, national sales tax. And it eliminates all embedded taxes from the point of conception of the product all the way up until the point where you purchase it. And it's only applied for the first-time purchase of the good. So if it's a used good that you're purchasing, there's no income or there's no sales tax whatsoever, because that tax on that good has already been paid.
Okay, and so what's the difference? As I read the Constitution, it talks about the United States, the states, and the people. And as I read the Federalist Papers, that it's tax is something that people can avoid, so said James Madison. It seems to me that the direct tax method they had of the Constitution to actually get a quota from the states based on a capitation is something that states could already do through a sales tax mechanism. What do you think on that?
That's correct. They actually said it was never actually used, but the original form of taxation that they had in mind was where they set it up where it was based on the enumeration of the states and a census would be taken, that each state would pay its percentage of the federal bill. And that never really happened. Everything was handled through import, export, and excise taxes. But it is a system that we could absolutely go to, and it would be left up to the state governments to determine how they would collect the revenue in order to pay that federal bill. The other way that they would protect us was by the way that the Senate used to be chosen, which is something that I want to return to, but with a repeal of the 17th Amendment, and that is allowing the states to choose their senators. That way the states will again have representation in the federal government, and they would have the ability to stop anything that was coming that was either unconstitutional or the states simply could not afford at the Senate level. So these are all checks and balances that used to be built into the system that are just no longer there.
Okay, we're going to take a break. Keep tuning in to Frank Talk 104.3 FM, 888-850-1872, to talk to Jason Sager when we return. And we'll see how we're going to maybe change from giving the federal government money instead of trying to figure out what benefits we can take from them. We'll be back.